Hello and welcome to this week's reflection from Stretton Vale Baptist Church. As we continue in John's Gospel, we reach the moment that Jesus is betrayed by one of his closest friends, which leads to him being arrested and taken to be interrogated. Judas had followed Jesus for his earthly ministry, listening to him as he taught, watching in wide-eyed wonder at the amazing miracles and signs Jesus performed. He'd experienced the compassion and love of Jesus as Jesus tended to the outcast and the rejected. And in the midst of all of this, Judas chooses to respond to everything Jesus offers with betrayal. A betrayal so grievous that it leads to his torture and death on a cruel cross. Why? Why does Judas respond to Jesus like this? What can we learn about Jesus' grace, love, and mercy by the way he responds to Judas' betrayal? And what does it mean for how we should live our lives? So let's read our passage, which is from John 18, verses 1 to 14. After Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples across the Kidron Valley to a place where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. Now Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, because Jesus often met there with his disciples. So Judas brought a detachment of soldiers together with police from the chief priests and the Pharisees. And they came there with lanterns and torches and weapons. Then Jesus, knowing all that was to happen to him, came forward and asked them, "Whom are you looking for?" They answered, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus replied, "I am he." Judas, who betrayed him, was standing with them. When Jesus said to them, "I am he," they stepped back and fell to the ground. Then again, Jesus asked them, "Whom are you looking for?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus answered, "I told you that I am he. So if you are looking for me, let these men go." This was to fulfill the word that he had spoken, "I did not lose a single one of those whom you gave me." Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it, struck the high priest's slave, and cut off his right ear. The slave's name was Malchus. Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword back into its sheath. Am I not to drink the cup that the Father has given me?" So the soldiers, their officer, and the Jewish police arrested Jesus and bound him. First they took him to Annas, who was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest that year. Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it was better to have one person die for the people. So our passage begins after Jesus has finished teaching his disciples and praying to his Father. He led them to a garden in the Kidron Valley, which we know from the other Gospels was called the Garden of Gethsemane. John tells us that Jesus often went to this place with his disciples. This was a familiar and supposedly safe place for the disciples to retreat to, probably a place that they had fond memories of. And so they are led to this place, presumably with barely any idea of what would take place next. Judas knew Jesus well enough to know where Jesus would be and to lead the chief priests, the Pharisees, the armed soldiers and the police straight to him. Think about that for a moment. You have to know someone pretty well to know their routines and habits, to be able to pinpoint where they would go and when. Clearly, Judas knew Jesus well enough to find him easily. Yet despite this knowledge of Jesus, Judas chooses to betray him to his death. How does our knowledge of Jesus affect the way we behave, both towards God and also towards other people? Clearly, Judas did not allow Jesus to impact the values and the core principles of his life because he chose the path of greed and betrayal instead of the path of life and love? How is Jesus influencing the way we live our lives? Judas chose his path, at least in part, because while he knew Jesus, or at least knew of or about Jesus, he didn't understand him or believe in him. This becomes evident when we read that Judas came with armed forces, preparing for a fight in which they would need to overwhelm Jesus with military power. Judas didn't understand Jesus enough to realise that Jesus was following his father's plan, and that included his arrest, death and resurrection. The way Jesus' enemies approached him to arrest him showed how very little they understood about who Jesus was. Judas clearly did not realise or believe that Jesus is truly the Son of God, because surely if he had, he would not have expected to be able to capture Jesus by force using earthly weapons. If Jesus had wanted to escape from his enemies, he would have had so many opportunities. He knew about the plot to kill him way in advance, and yet he did not run from it. Jesus knew that if he went to Jerusalem, he would be killed. And still he went. He knew that Judas was going to betray him. And yet still he let Judas leave him to see the Pharisees. Jesus knew that Judas would lead them to the Garden of Gethsemane. And yet still that is where he went. When the forces approached, Jesus could have slipped away into the darkness of the night. And even in that moment, when his captors had arrived and he was right in front of them, Jesus could have fought against them, calling down the wrath of God upon them. And yet, Jesus peacefully approached them and engaged them not in violence, but in conversation, before offering himself up to be captured. And it is clear that had he wanted, Jesus could have fought them off. The mere mention of who he is had the guard stepping back and falling to the ground as the power and wonder of Jesus, fully man and fully God, says, "I am he," which in the Greek would have just been the words, "I am." So the idea of bringing weapons against the one who could cause people to fall to the ground by speaking his name is quite frankly ridiculous. And so when Simon Peter attempts to fight on Jesus' behalf, Jesus is quick to rebuke him. "Put your sword back into its sheath. Am I not to drink the cup that my father has given me?" It's pretty evident that Jesus walked into this voluntarily. He could have run, he could have fought, but he didn't. Judas did not understand that Jesus was motivated by unearthly love. Love for his father and love for the world. Jesus' love for the father ensured that he followed his father's plan through to the end, despite what it would cost him. And Jesus' love for the world enabled Jesus to go to his death without hesitating, so that he could sacrifice his life to save us. Do we recognise and accept the love that Jesus has for us? Do we allow that amazing divine love to impact us and influence the way that we love others as well? Jesus' love is beyond comprehension, and yet it is freely offered to all, not just for us to experience, but for us to use to love others. The chief priests, Pharisees, and Judas came against Jesus, the Prince of Peace, with weapons and military force. Yet Jesus didn't flinch or hesitate, but instead willingly allowed himself to be taken. Instead of allowing them to confront him with violent force, Jesus approached them and offered himself up. We are told, Jesus, knowing all that was to happen to him, came forward and asked them, "Whom are you looking for?" They answered, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus replied, "I am he." I can only imagine how much this must have confused the chief priests and the Pharisees, and especially those soldiers and police that came to take Jesus into custody. So I'm just going to end on a little monologue from the perspective of one of the soldiers in the crowd. "I don't understand it. I had come prepared. My blood is pumping, ready for a fight. We had marched from the centre of Jerusalem to the Valley of Kidron to finally get here in the Garden of Gethsemane. And all along the journey, we had been psyching each other up, expecting to see some action. But now that we're here, seems there's no need to fight at all. I must admit, I'm feeling pretty disappointed. I was looking forward to a good fight. But I just don't understand. We were told that this man is a highly dangerous revolutionary with the ability to do awesome things. We were told that he was leading this large group of rebels who were prepared to fight to defend their leader. But that's not what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a small group of men who are not organised or prepared for a fight at all." Then one of them comes forward, the leader, from what I can guess. And all he does is he asks us, "Whom are you looking for?" So of course we tell him, "Jesus of Nazareth." And this man says, "I am he." As he says that, it's almost like there's a wave of power that has overcome us. We all find ourselves taking a step back and falling to the ground. Who is this man? What can he do? How can we fight against this man if he can make us fall to the ground with only a few words? He opens his mouth to speak again, and I feel myself tensing. What is he about to do? But he only asks us again, "Whom are you looking for?" So again we reply, "Jesus of Nazareth." And again he calmly replies, "I told you that I am he. So if you are looking for me, let these men go." I'm astonished. The one we are looking for, the one who we are prepared to fight, has just offered himself up to us. And all he asks is that we let the other men go, which is fine with me. I have no quarrel with them. Oops, I guess I thought that too soon. As soon as that thought finished in my head, one of those men drew a sword and cut Malchus's ear, taking it off completely. I immediately draw my sword and hear the sound of every other soldier doing the same. But Jesus, the man we are hunting, turns to the disciple with the sword and says, "Put your sword back into its sheath. Am I not to drink the cup that the Father has given me?" And immediately the disciples resheath his sword, and Jesus allows us to arrest him, binding him tight so that he cannot fight back. As we march back into Jerusalem, to Annas's house, the previous high priest, all I can think is, this is one weird night. Who is this man that would allow himself be bound and taken to his death? I just don't understand.